Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's August 4, 2014, and this is episode 433. Today, I'm really happy to bring you an interview with Brian Burling, the founder of Emotimo, a San Francisco-based company that makes the TB3, a three-axis motion-controlled camera robot that allows you to capture moving time-lapse, video and stop-motion video more easily and affordably than ever before. We also have a winner for the last MBP Fine Art print giveaway, so listen to the end after the interview to hear about that, and also I'll give you details of the next giveaway that we've just kicked off. I'd also like to do a very quick shout out to John Hardman. Thanks for your email, John, but the reply bounced, so if you could email again and give me a new address or a correct address, I'll email you my reply. So for now, let's jump in and listen to my interview with Brian Burling. Welcome to the show there, Brian.
Thank you very much, Martin. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's my pleasure, really. So I've got a whole bunch of questions to ask you. Obviously, I'm aware of your technology, and I want to get straight into that, but before we do, could you just give us a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Before I did Emotimo, I wore a lot of different hats and different jobs. But I'm a trained mechanical engineer, and I studied mechatronics, which is really what Emotimo is. It's coupling mechanical and electrical systems together. But right after school, I didn't do anything with that at all. I jumped into consulting, and I helped large companies with their finances and budgeting and forecasting and other things that paid the bills, but took me all around the world, but it wasn't really my passion. So about 4 years ago, I stepped away, and I wanted to build and actually make a device. And with my love of photography and my background, and seeing some of the things, really the shots that sort of got me were from planet Earth at the time. And there's a few scenes in there. It was just a jaw drop. I'm like, how did they make that? And so I'm like, maybe with my background and my interests, I might be able to come up with some devices and some robots really to help others make that too.
Wow. That's an amazing story. What was the type of engineering you're into, did you say?
Mechanical, but there's a specialty in there called mechatronics.
It's really
the best way to describe it is robots. But wow. It's a combination. It's really this neat place we're playing in the industry. We're combining these embedded microcontrollers with these mechanical systems and doing new things with them. And so it used to be like a mechanical engineer was just, I'm going to build this individual widget, and it was just all about the structure of it and the strength of it. But now there's a lot of crossover between that and these embedded systems and the guts of what makes a robot work.
Wow. That word is right up there with kryptonite and bionic. It's like, that's crazy. That's it. Really, really interesting. So again, before we jump into more information about the device, continue to get more background on you. You're a hobbyist photographer as well.
That's where I started. So I never made any money off my photography selling prints. I did short films for hobby, but never made any money on this. The way I made my money and the way I spend a lot of my time was with this consulting. I sold my soul for a little bit of time and did this big corporate stuff for a while. But my interests always were around visual and images, and really what drew me back to it was just coupling images and photography, images and the right sound and the right audio track together. It just, when it happens correctly, just would grab me and it would just drive emotion. And that's maybe you can hear some of my company name in there, but Emotimo is really Emotimo, emotion, motors, time. That's what we were going for too. So hopefully we've sort of the background of how we got to a name on there too is it stems from really, I would say my passions rather than my professions.
Okay, that's incredible. So, I do... although, you know, as a still photographer myself, I love to try and tell that whole story in one still silent photograph. But there are always times when, you know, like you say, you add in a bit of the sound, the audio, and a bit of motion really, really tells a totally different story. So I've not done a lot of time-lapse myself. I did a few night sky time-lapses in Namibia last year, and I've done little bits here and there. But looking at the videos that you've got posted on your website from your users, a lot of the stuff is just absolutely out of this world.
Yeah, we're amazed by it too, and maybe that's where the maybe I could say that is we make the tools, but really we're in awe with what our users create around this as well. So
yeah, and I think it takes a special type of person as well. That, you know, just because you're a photographer doesn't mean you're going to be a good time lapse photographer, and vice versa. So it's you know, there's definitely a different skill set that's required there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's, you know, taking a single image and capturing that emotion, that feeling, it is a very different problem to solve. And there's a lot of crossover. I mean, the thing that's driving this and sort of how I'm really what enabled us to play in this arena and bring these small robots to action is the size of the camera. I mean, most of our customers, if there's one camera people are shooting with, it's the 5D, whether that be the 5D Mark II or the 5D Mark III. But that just that size and that format just revolutionized what you could do with it. And so immediately the photographer, I mean, this is old news, but it's immediately the photographer who has those lenses now has the ability to be a videographer and a filmmaker, and do it not just on a level that looks okay that you can show to your family and friends, but on a level that, you know, you can show on an IMAX screen. So it's it's the defining people as a photographer or as a filmmaker. It's a fun point right now where it's not one or the other. You have the tools, and so it's what you choose to do with it.
Absolutely. So how did you, obviously you've got this background and you wanted to create a device. What was the actual initial impetus to actually go ahead and actually form a company and, you know, found Emotimo?
It was kind of a leap of faith, jumping away from the paying job to do something. And I didn't know it was going to be Emotimo or exactly what it was going to be at the time. It was in 2010. I gave some notice to my existing company, and really for the next 3 months, I just threw a lot of ideas around and I played around. I looked at what I felt I was good at and what I had the passion in, and I came up with a long list of things to do, asked a lot of questions, a lot of silly questions, and looked at the tool sets that were available to me. I'll give a quick shout out to the DIY space called Tech Shop. Started in San Jose, actually in Menlo Park, and has locations around the U.S. Right at that time, that was coming online, and they had basically this massive workshop that you could go and really like a gym membership style payment plan, you could go in and use a lot of the tools. Wow. So I was looking at that as sort of a as an accelerator as well, like what can I do with this? And with my mechanical engineering background and some machining background, that enabled me to expand what I thought I could do beyond just, hey, let me go raise some funding or let me come up with a very small idea that I know I can do myself. It was, let's stretch out and let's build a real product that takes some real machining, some real embedded systems engineering, some, you know, we used like 15 or 20 different processes in there to make the product initially. But that's sort of where we ended up 6 months down the line. The initial process was trying to really define what I wanted to do. What was my perfect job? What did I think I would enjoy waking up and doing all the time? And finding a company and working with passionate, driven people to create vivid imagery that evokes emotion was very high on the list. And so played around, built some prototypes. The first ones were made out of the first Emotimo was made out of, before it was called anything like that, it was made out of wood in my buddy's garage. And and slowly I realized, I'm like, I think for about $500 I could build a robot that would do exactly what the planet Earth feel was giving me with the seasonal changes. And I understood the technology beneath it, underneath it. And I saw if I can draw and build out a user interface on top of that and make it the right price for these small cameras. might have something here. So, yeah, it wasn't just my leaving and saying, oh, I'm going to build this thing and it's going to look like this. It was, there's actually about 80 or 90 ideas that in some form of creation that are off to the side and maybe waiting for a different time in my life. But if this was the one that bubbled to the surface, is the one that I was really passionate about, and I thought I had the right skills to bring to market, and the right toolkit around me with the tech shop emerging, that I'm like, this could be something. So took a chance.
That's incredible, an incredible story. I love the idea of being able to just go and rent space in a DIY area, you know, where you can do all of that stuff.
I will, you should check it out. We've got it on our blog somewhere. And if anybody's interested, they're in the US now, and I think they're going to be popping up elsewhere. But techshop.ws, is that the, Logan, is that the website for Tech Shop?
Tech Shop.
We'll link it on up there later, but it's in the U.S. right now. There's probably about 15 locations, and it is really I think that's accelerating. There's a few companies that have popped out of there in right out of San Francisco. Yep, techshop.ws for workshop. But okay. It is fascinating. You know, they should be everywhere, is my opinion.
It's incredible. I mean, normally one of the biggest things to stopping people from doing that kind of engineering on their own is the cost of the tools. So that really, I mean, that really lowers the hurdle to actually, you know, the price of entry.
It does. I mean, really, I was saying, well, I could spend, I mean, because I started with a certain amount of capital and I had certain ideas, how far can I take this? And my roadmap, once I discovered that, extended by about 2 years with the existing money I had. I'm like, I don't need to buy these machines, or I don't need to rent space to even have the machines. Like, you've got to put it somewhere too, and these things weigh thousands of pounds. Like, we were using some of the heavy CNC equipment, but that was definitely a big enabler for us.
Wow. So the device itself, the TB3, tell us a little bit about it. What's I know that to you, I mean, it's your child. It's like it's the specialist device in the world. But tell us what's special about the TB3 compared to other, you know, similar things, similar sure. devices.
Yeah, I mean, at its core, it is a precision pan and tilt robot, and it's meant for cameras. And the way it was engineered and the way we've constructed it is really, we are focused on function rather than form, and we are focused on performance from the start. And we didn't realize the level of precision that you needed when we started. We were using the wrong gears, we were using the wrong methods to drive things. But very quickly, and you know this if you've ever picked up a laser pointer, and you just try to hold it steady and you look at that dot 15, 20 feet away from you bouncing around just by the pulse of your arm, you realize that once you, and that's basically your eyeballs, and really any camera that's on a tripod, you go up and you tap the side of the tripod and you're going to see without optical image stabilization how shaky the image is. Contrast that with looking out the side of a window and getting some parallax of a car moving along, and a slider shot, and you through some engineering studies, we realized then, and we looked at some of the other DIY slider projects out there and some of the open source slider projects out there. We said that you can make amazing imagery with it. Let's bring pan and tilt into the mix. But the problem of solving pan and tilt cleanly, it was harder than we thought. So the thing that really makes the TB3 special along the way is the precision of it. And it kind of goes unnoticed until you look at some of the comparable products that are even popping out now at similar price points. We have precision down to greater than a hundredth of a degree on our pan and tilt. We're fully repeatable, which means that we can take the same shot over and over again, overlay it in post. And all these, this technical functionality, what it really means to the end user is like, they don't care about the precision, they don't care about it. But what it means is they can do a lot with it. We started off doing just basic point A, point B time-lapse shots. And it's like, start here, end there. And even that at the time was revolutionary, because setting up a shot and defining how you move this around, still people come from other products and they say, well, I just want to be able to pan at 5 degrees a second. And they're thinking, not like a director. There's no director that's going to sit down to a movie and say, I'd like a 5-degree-per-second pan and maybe just add a little bit of tilt at the end and we'll shut it off when we want. It's like, no, you're framing your shots. You're defining what you want. So we put a lot of precision in there to make it repeatable, and we put a user interface on top of it that is tremendously easy for users to pick up and understand and make compelling shots. And so I think there's a few things that make it special, but really the technology and the mechanics underneath it. We have a very tight, no backlash gear train that's very precise, and then we layered on an interface over the top of it to allow users to really go through and program shots cleanly.
Wow. So I've not actually used the device. So what I'm trying to imagine here, how you set it up. When you go to set up a series of motion, do you say, like, point the camera here and say, okay, start here, and then point it to where you want it to end and say, end here?
That's it. And we have a wireless. I don't have one here because I was mentioning earlier I'm packing for a big trip. And actually my TV3 and a couple other things have been shipped out to the middle of Utah where I'm going to be spending some time. But there are some great videos on the site under our instructional videos, and the basic setup will give users a wonderful idea of how it's set up. The pan and tilt is easy. We have a little thumb stick that you rock your thumb back and forth. And you have just two buttons. You click one of them and it sets the start point. The TV3 will prompt you, move to your end point. You set it the same way. You're doing interval shooting here, and the TV3 will actually interact with your camera and say, take the picture now. It handles the triggering there. So there's a cable that attaches, and you define your intervals associated with that. And then really there's just a few other simple parameters to set to give you a cinematic looking shot, because really at its core, and what any digital SLR is giving you these days is you are a filmmaker, and so you've got to think like a filmmaker when you define these things, when you define these shots. And so about 7 steps to be able to define this shot, and very quickly you're getting exactly what you wanted. We can send some links out there, but on Emotimo.com, there's learn, and then there's instructional videos, and it just takes about a minute and a half to see how we program it.
I'll link to them in the blog post as well. So,
okay.
The blog will be at mbp.ac/433 for episode 433. But by all means, head over to Emotimo as well and check that out.
And really, I would say. We could talk about it a lot of what it does and sort of the underlying functionality of how to program the shot. But the amazing thing is some of the footage we have up there. And I shot none of it at this point. Like I said, we're the tool maker. All of our customers, what they're doing with it is really quite phenomenal. So you'll see also, besides the learn how to use it videos, there's inspiration out there. And some of the things people are doing is really quite compelling.
I agree. I mean, I've looked through a whole bunch of the videos and it's pretty crazy stuff. I love what people are doing with it. So, I mean, obviously, when people go, if you go and check out those videos, you'll be able to see the sort of the way people are using it. But can you tell us a little bit about, that there's a difference between your time lapse and stop motion, for example. What can you explain the difference there?
Really, film, stop motion, or video, or time lapse—it all comes down to the same thing, which is we're taking a shot over time, and it's just a matter of if you're doing it at 24 frames a second on regular film, or if you're doing it 60 frames a second on a GoPro, or you're over cranking a RED, or you're taking a shot every 1 minute and you've got a 35 second exposure that you're working through. So it really is at its core the same thing, which is frame photography, but the effect is really quite different. So starting with what most photographers understand is single shot. You compose your single frame, and then at a series of known intervals, you repeat that. And if you add motion in between that, like the TB3 can add, you can get a very smooth smooth shot and a smooth sequence between between these starting endpoints, and you define it very cleanly. So we call that type of photography SMS, or shoot, move, shoot photography. And it really is interval based. And if you've, a lot of people do have intervalometers that are just, you just set the interval down to the second or down to the tenth of a second, and your camera will clock off a picture every single time. It's essentially the same thing as that, just adding motion. The other side of things, and what a lot of people are starting to shoot a lot with now, because beyond just time-lapse photography, we enable these specialized types of video effects and video, moving video shots. And at that point, you're not triggering your camera to shoot at a single interval. You are triggering, you basically start the camera and then move it in a very programmatic way. And a lot of what people are doing now is they're actually taking multi-pass sequences where they will go through and take a shot and then take another shot, and then they can overlay those in post. And that's where it starts getting fun for us, is because we're doing now with the TB3 what it would take a, used to be, you know, tens of thousands, sometimes million-dollar rigs are moving these big cameras around in these repeatable ways, and you'd only see those effects in big movies. So there's really, really shoot, move, shoot photography, or interval-based photography, or these repeatable video shots are some of the big ways people are using it. The third way, which you talked about too, is stop motion, where people are actually changing. You can actually connect the TB3 to a computer over USB. We don't have a lot of people using this yet. But it actually works quite well, and we have a few great examples coming out. But you can actually drive the TB3 with desktop software. A very good one that we interface perfectly with is called DragonFrame. You drive all that motion, and you drive actually, you control everything by USB, your camera and the rig, and they will actually only take the picture when they're ready. So they're actually using puppets and figurines, and they're moving things around, changing things around. It's claymation or any other type of stop motion. But adding that motion inside of it, and be able to, there's very clever things you can do if you actually take these multiple passes we were talking about before. And we have a great, I think we can talk about it. Mauricio is about to release. He's working. Mauricio is a gentleman that's going to release a production called Crickets. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen shot in a studio. And just I will send some links to this. So I can't. It's the trailer's been completed, and the post production's happening over the next about 3 or 4 weeks. And they use the TB3 to add motion inside of it. And kind of back to the less beautiful parts about it, but really what enables that to happen is the fact that the TB3 has such precision on three axes. We've talked about pan and tilt, but you can also connect this thing to a slider. They can move this camera in such a precise way. They can take these multiple passes, go back and reshoot a frame that they missed or they need to redo, and they get these movie quality results without having to think about the technology. It just works for them.
Wow. Well, that sort of technology, I mean, you mentioned the price of what it would cost to do some of this stuff earlier. That sort of technology would have been literally tens of thousands of dollars a few years ago. How much is someone going to pay for the TB3?
The TB3 is basically $1,000, and that is the box. That is the it's a three-axis controller in there, and then on top of that are the mechanics for the pan and tilt. And there's several different sliders we integrate to. We've got links on the site. We link to the dynamic receptions sliders, the stage one, the stage zero. It's a very popular open source slider that started right around the same time, a little bit before we did. We actually resell Rhino sliders as well. We integrate to various Kessler sliders. And these are all ways you can add that third axis of motion. And so what you get with the TB3, though, with $1,000 is the pan and tilt movement. You can mount your camera right on top, and the ability to plug in another motor to the TB3.
Wow. So you know, I've seen obviously, just moving the camera is great, adds a huge extra dimension, but you don't have to move the camera on a slider very far to get quite a lot of movement in the frame, right? It almost doesn't compare. You know, you move it by a few feet, and it seems like in camera, it seems like you're moving quite a distance.
It's all about technique, and I would say that that sliding motion, you can get by. I mean, some of these guys out here, they're doing some of the big time lapses. They're rigging 18 feet of rail, and they're moving it, and they're doing this in front of some of these massive pylons, and out where I'm headed out to Utah. I mean, they're out in some of these national parks where you're going to see these huge arches. And if your foreground objects or your objects that you want to have this parallax effect on are further away, you need to get some big movement. But I have more fun with a little 2-foot slider, throwing it over my shoulder and just finding some great foreground objects, going through grass or going around going through a log. It's just, you can create a lot of camera motion and a beautiful high quality, high production value, shot without too much movement. Tracking shots are really, really quite powerful too, because when we have the ability to aim the camera and really focus in on a subject matter, you can start somewhere off frame and then just end up perfectly highlighting a scene you want. And it could be a blade of grass, or it could be an ant going on. I'm into macro photography now, so I've just got a really fun lens that I can't stop playing with. So I think more along the small scale, but along those same lines, you can perfectly frame what you're looking for. It's pretty exciting because, like you said, the not only is the equipment much less expensive, and it can be because we're using it with these smaller cameras, so we don't need to have these big mechanics in a truck to haul around with this. So we can quickly we have something that's inexpensive, lightweight, and a single person can take it to the top of a mountain. And so that really does open up a lot of new possibilities.
It's liberating for sure. You know, you reminded me. I have a couple of good friends, Dan and Dave Newcomb. They're up in Vancouver, and those guys have done some amazing time lapse work. And I started to recall, as you were talking about, the 18 foot sliders, they developed what they call a rail walker, which is basically you take it up to, say, the railings just in a public place, Yeah, they have their rail walker actually walk along public railings and things like that. And obviously, it's got to be relatively smooth and what have you. But that was something pretty cool that they developed.
Oh, I think that's really neat. I was walking on by. I was last weekend in San Francisco. It was great weather, and I was walking through North Beach, and they were shooting some movie in San Francisco. And it was some earthquake movie, because that's, all they'll shoot in San Francisco. We're all going to shake ourselves into the ocean. But it was just so boring watching them shoot this with the huge tracks, the three cameras, the green screen that we're setting on up. And it was a snail's pace to be able to shoot this thing. And it was, for me at least, and I think probably for most photographers, you don't have that sort of patience. We don't have a huge budget. You don't have 50 people on your payroll to go out and shoot in the afternoon. What's really fascinating is to use found objects and to go out and go gorilla and go and find something interesting. So when we were testing some of our rail systems and some of our new products, it's the really figuring out how useful it is for us. We throw it on our shoulder. We go out in the world and we see what we can capture. And it's usually the compelling things that pop out from that usually aren't what we think they're going to be. And, putting that, you're like, hey, can I shoot on this bumpy concrete wall? Or what would happen if I climbed on this, or hang this from a tree? And I would say, at least for me, being lightweight, being portable, it just puts me in places and gives me new ideas that I wouldn't have, even if I could afford that, the $50,000 in the truck and the crew and the five different people who would be ruining my creative vision. So I think I think for most people, at least the audience we're going for, being portable, having an affordable piece of gear that can always be in your kit, I think that's liberating for them, and that it enables them to shoot more. So
absolutely. So earlier on, you mentioned a number of cameras, the GoPro, obviously the Canon 5Ds and the Reds. Does the TB3 integrate with pretty much any camera? You've got the Nikons, and how about Sonys, and does it integrate with anything?
Well, I would say let's start with a digital SLRs and put those into a category. And so all the way down the line, almost with any camera, we just released a cable for the Sony A7R and Sony A7S, I believe. Both those will work. That's really the latest one, but really almost any Nikon, almost any Canon. Once we start getting into sort of the larger video cameras and the larger, the heavier cameras, once you start getting up there, the TB3, we don't talk to those necessarily and say, take a picture now. And really at a certain point, really we say 8 pounds is about our limit of weight. So we have a lot of customers who are pushing way above that, and they're doing some really creative stuff just because they can. But I would say our sweet spot is really in that digital SLR market with really any lens. And at that point, yep, it's pretty easy to, and you can look on our site, we've got some cable guides in there, and it's fairly convenient for people to buy the TB3, select one cable for their primary camera, and then I think they're 10 or 12 bucks. You can add on another cable and connect it to another camera.
Wow. Let's do a three tips section. Can you give us three tips that will help people to get better, obviously stunning, time lapse or stop motion video? Just a three tips.
Well, that's sort of a loaded question, as you probably know. There's no magic formula that's going to make it work, but. I would say going completely opposite of that is find your own style. I mean, you can emulate, and really that's how we started, is looking at Planet Earth, saying, how did they shoot those shots? And so maybe that's a good place to start, is figuring out what you like. And there's a ton of great guys out there that are very open. So I think it's finding your style. Some people are all about fast cuts, and you know, maybe it's overplayed a little bit, but they're all about dubstep, kind of throwing it in there. It's very in your face, and those are a lot of fun as well. Some people are all about the nature-y, super flowy feel to it, but really it's we're making film, so it's really, you've got to find your own style. But the neat thing is, you don't have to time-lapse. There's certain parts where you do have to invest a lot of time, and so getting good at basic time-lapse photography before you put motion in there is a great tip, because adding motion isn't going to solve the problems if your exposure isn't good, or if you know your camera's buffer is filling up and it's missing shots. So getting good at transitioning from a photography into time-lapse, it's a complete art, and there's a ton of great resources out there on what exposure should I use, how should I be triggering, the lenses for Astro if you want to go that route. There's so many facets and so many different things, or so many different ways you could play. Find one or two of those, investigate those. The forums are going to tell you a ton. So I would say research is a big one as well. And then second tip I'd tell you is just play. It is so easy to go out and try something new with this stuff. Here's the third tip, but don't be afraid you're going to wear out your shutter. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, there's my 150,000 picture rated shutter, or my 200,000K or 200K rated shutter, and it's like, oh, I don't want to go and waste time with that. I don't know a whole lot of people who have broken down shutters, and you know, it's go out and play and shoot a lot, get good at your post-processing workflow, and just experiment, because it's the only way you're going to really find what you like. I'm trying to think of, I would say ask a lot of questions of the people whose style you like. Everyone's really friendly in this space, and maybe back to finding my dream job, it's being outside of a stodgy conference room and fluorescent lighting. You know, you get to go out in the field and you get to explore and be in nature, and the people that associate themselves with this art are pretty cool people. So they're friendly. They'll give you some tips. They might not tell you all the little tweaks of their post-production workflow if they don't know you, but you can find them on Google+. You can find them on Twitter. And we've got a ton of great ones that are that shoot with a Motomo product that are always giving me tips. Like I said, the time lapses and the videos I make, I think, pale in comparison to some of our professional shooters. So I'm asking for tips as well, and they're just telling me what's wrong with the tool, and we help feed them. So it's a good circular process.
That's great.
But it's fun to learn.
Excellent. Well, that's brilliant. Thanks very much. So we talked about the pricing. Where can people actually go and buy a TB3?
Well, we'd love it if you come out to Motomo.com and buy directly from us. Obviously, when we sell it, we make a little bit more. It goes back into our R&D budget, and we like that a lot. But if you want to buy from a bigger distributor, you can buy from Adorama. They've got product in stock. Also on Amazon, we've got them up there. Overseas, we have a couple distributors that we've got links on our website to, but I'll give them some quick shout-outs. In Germany, we have Camera Obscura, our kids of all ages out there. We can give some links to these, and then we have Elijah Visuals in the Netherlands that have regular stock of our product. And so if you're close by there, it's really easy to pick up. Out in Australia, we have a distributor for Cornerstone Solutions or Photo Sentinel. Both of those have product, and I think a couple brick and mortar shops out in Melbourne as well. So easy to find. We ship direct all over the world too if anybody's out of stock, but pretty easy to start with us, and then stateside it's easy, but there's probably a few distributors that have it, or a few resellers that have it closer than we do.
Okay, excellent stuff. So you've got something special coming up in August. This, obviously, we're talking at the end of July here. This is going to go into my podcast feed on probably August 4th. You've got something special coming up in August?
Got a contest coming up as well, and actually a giveaway, a TB3 giveaway that we're going to be doing. So if you log on into, if you check out our Motomo site very quickly, we're going to have a landing page describing a giveaway contest. And so if TB3 is out of reach right now, or you just wanted to throw your hat in the ring, we're doing a little giveaway throughout August as well. That's easy to sign up for.
That's excellent. So how can people get hold of you? You know, obviously we've got your website. How about socially? How can people find you?
Facebook and Twitter are our big ones right here. We're growing up on Google Hangouts right here, but we're a small company, so we're kind of dividing and conquering. But Facebook is a big one, and there's just a ton of content out there by our users. So facebook.com/Motomo. We have the Motomo Twitter account as well, and you'll see links and some content up there. That's a good place to grab a hold of us socially. Instagram is growing up as well. The EMOTIMO is our Instagram account there, so it's pretty easy to find us there. And we're friendly people. We've got just a small group of folks, so we love to hear from you if you've got some questions, and you can send us some emails as well. And people call us all the time too, so we like to hear from you, and we love selling products and supporting products for our passionate user base.
Excellent. Well, I'll put links to everything into the blog post for this as well. But it's been a lot of fun speaking today, Brian. I've learned a lot about the TB3 and you guys. So you know, good luck with the future, and I look forward to seeing what else is going to be coming along from your, you know, as you build out your product range.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and thanks for taking the time to chat.
Okay, not at all. Okay.
Sounds good, Martin. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot. See you then, Brian. Bye-bye. That was a lot of fun. So I will put a blog post together at mbp.ac/4433 where you'll be able to go and get all of the links, and I'll embed videos and some product images as well. Before we finish, I'd like to just update you on the fine art print giveaway that we were running. We have a winner for the last draw, and a 17 by 24 inch print of my Dead Flay silhouettes image is on its way to John Dilworth in the US. So congratulations, John. The next print that I'm giving away is my monumental icebergs photograph from Sierva Cove in Antarctica, which will be drawn on October 31st. So that's after I get back from my Iceland tour. To enter your name for the draw, please visit the giveaway page at mbp.ac/giveaway. Thanks very much for listening today, and remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter and Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.